stand to reasons, hashtag STR Ask Podcast. I'm Amy Hall, and Greg Kokel's here with me, and this is the podcast where we get your questions from Twitter with the hashtag STR Ask, and then we respond as best as we can, hopefully helping you out a little bit with your questions. Mm-hmm. So, Greg, this first question, in the last episode, there was a question about whether it's biblical to believe that Christians no longer sin after being saved. Mm-hmm. So a question that people might have after that is a question I have here from Think McFly. How should I respond to Christians that think Jesus must have sinned because he was fully human?
Well, the mistake that's being made here, and I have to introduce a philosophical term that's really a helpful one. The thing about philosophy is it, among other things, it allows you to make refined distinctions so that you can see reality more clearly. Okay, so here are the distinctions that I want to draw. One is essential and the other one is accidental. Essential and accidental. So, Amy, you are a human being with brown hair and I think brown eyes. I can't tell. Is that right?
Yeah.
Brown hair and brown eyes. Okay. Being a physical body with a soul is native and essential, as it were, or necessary to being a human being. All right? Your body's not human anymore when your soul flies and when you die, okay? It just decays and it's just stuff, all right? It'll be resurrected, but at that point, it's not a human body anymore, strictly speaking. You're not all there. So having a soul is essential to being or necessary to being human, but not having brown eyes or brown hair, that's not essential, or having a gender, I mean, have a particular gender or whatever. So there are certain characteristics that we have that are vital, that are tied to the nature of being human. And there are other characteristics that are not vital and are not tied to the nature of being human, such that someone may not have that characteristic and still be human. All right? So the question now is, what is a true human with regards to the sin question? And the best model of a true human that's not a controversy right now at issue is Adam. So Adam was a genuine human. Was Adam fallen? No. He was not fallen. He was morally innocent. There was no sin in him, or Eve, for that matter, in the first human beings when God made them. So being sinful is not an essential or necessary feature of humanity. It's an accidental feature. That is, it is something that later became applied to humanity and is universal in humanity, with the exception of Jesus, but it is not essential to humanity. And so Jesus could be a true human being having all the essential or necessary features of humanity without having some particular accidental features of humanity. I don't know what his eye color was. He wasn't blue-eyed. I imagine he's brown-eyed, but that doesn't change his humanity because he doesn't have blue eyes and blonde hair like a Swede or something like that. These are accidental features. And so the reason that Jesus can be a true human is he had all the characteristics that are native to true humanity. Fallenness is not native to true humanity. It is an accidental, and what I mean by accidental is not that it happened by accident in the sense that we usually use the word. I'm using it in the philosophical sense that it is an accidental quality. It is not an essential or necessary quality. So it may or may not be. It doesn't change humanity. So that, and I was just going to say that's the simple way of making the distinction, and many listening might think, well, that's not simple. But I had to employ some categories that allow us to see what's going on here and to answer the question. So these philosophical categories can be really helpful in these kinds of circumstances. And I make this point fairly clearly in the story of reality that when it comes to Jesus, Jesus was one of us. He had every characteristic that is a native essential part of humanity. He is the second Adam, as Paul describes him in Romans 5.
And when we are in the new earth, when we have our resurrected bodies, we won't be sinning either. So even in our case, and not just Adam's case before the fall, even in our case, we'll be human and we will not sin. If God is to be believed, that there will be no sin. All right, let's go to another question from Sue Ann.
It's been like months and months since we answered a question in less than 6 minutes. Wow. That's good. Okay. Now I'm over 6 minutes, so let's just jump into the next one. Sorry.
Sue Ann asks, how do I gracefully open the conversation on Christ with a Hindu friend who just got diagnosed with a terminal illness? I know that previously she and her child had a bad, hostile experience with a Christian lady just because her child asked some questions about Christianity.
Well, that's a tricky issue to deal with. When you have a circumstance where somebody's life is on the line, that makes it a little more intense and a bit more pressing. Okay. I guess as I'm thinking about it, and I'm not the kind of person that's most clever at getting into conversations from kind of a dead standstill. I feel flat on my feet in those circumstances. If I'm being challenged or opposed, that's different. Then the tactical game plan kind of kicks in. But in this circumstance, I think what I would do to start out is say, I would like to pray for you. So the friend has now communicated that there's this diagnosis. From the Hindu perspective, the diagnosis and the whole circumstance is just an illusion, M-A-Y-A, Maya. Maybe a question, as a Hindu, you might ask the question, as a Hindu, what do you make of this? As I understand it, Hinduism teaches that reality as we understand it is an illusion. It's just Maya. Do you think that's the case or is this real? Now, there are some versions of Hinduism that don't hold that, but you might just ask the question. And you might say, I'd like to pray for you, but I want to understand something about your understanding. Is this real or not? And if it's real, then, Hinduism isn't going to do a very good job of explaining it. But there is a God in heaven, a real God, that cares about you. And I want to pray to the real God to work in your life. Would that be all right with you? And then I presume people are going to say, yes, I don't think I've ever had a person turn me down for prayer when I've asked if I could pray for them. And then pray a very natural prayer. Don't pray a rote kind of mechanical type prayer. That's what people are used to in religion. Talk to God in a personal way and ask God to bring wholeness and healing to that individual regarding the cancer and to reveal himself to the person and to reveal Jesus to them, not as another God, but as the God come down from heaven to rescue us. Something like that. There's an entree. Now, there may be opportunity for more discussion, but basically you are contrasting their religious view with ours, and we're saying that this doesn't tell you the way the world really is. But our God is part of the real world, and I want to pray for you. And so that act of kindness and charity that is being shown in that circumstance, coupled with the few words that are meant to lay a little foundation for a contrasting worldview may provide a good stepping stone into further conversations. What do you think, Amy?
I think you are exactly right about how to get into this. You ask her what she thinks about this. Ask her about her view. I don't know a whole lot about Hinduism. I would be interested to know, how does she view her sickness? How does she view about what will happen to her after her death? What are her fears? What does Hinduism seem to solve for her? What does it not solve for her? Sometimes you just have to get into the conversation before you know where to take it next. She will tell you what her concerns are, because whatever her concern is, ultimately, Christ will fulfill that in some way, because our desires for, we have a desire for peace with God because we feel that guilt, we feel that, you talk about this, Greg, the inside-outside thing, right, where we have these things that we know, even if we try to deny them or even if they're covered over with cultural beliefs, and you can get to those, you can draw her out if she trusts you. Mm-hmm. So if you're asking her questions about what she believes, I think you will see where to take it from there, mm-hmm, because you'll find out what's important to her.
And what you're talking about more specifically, probably in this case, is the awareness of our own guilt and responsibility. And mm-hmm, in a certain sense, there's a kind of a karma thing. It's not karma, but there's a parallel where, at least in karma, there is a consequence for behavior. Now, it expresses itself weird because all of that stuff is part of the illusion, but in the illusion there is this what goes around comes around mentality, and there is a kinship with Christianity. If you plant to destruction, you will reap destruction. You know, you sow to the world when you weep, etc. So that's something that's part of our makeup. We know this. We feel guilty because we are guilty, and that which is on the inside is coming out. That's actually a chapter in the New Tactics book, and the tactic is called Inside Out. So that might be one that one can speak to. The idea of Inside Out is that you know this is true about an individual, and so you can begin to speak to that reality that's in them, even if they are not at the moment affirming it. It's real, and especially in facing a life or death circumstance, I think those things are going to be more coming to the surface.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about karma, think about the hopelessness of that. There's no way out for you. It's a law. You do something bad, you pay for it. There's no way out of that. There's no grace in that.
Right.
So think about how the gospel will sound to somebody who believes in karma. It may even believe that she's sick because of something she's done.
Mm-hmm.
The gospel will sound to somebody who believes that like a very beautiful thing. So that's a great topic to bring up, Greg. I'm glad you mentioned that. I hadn't even thought of that. And one other thing you might do is say, you know, you're sorry that her daughter had a bad experience, but what were her questions? You'd love to answer them.
Yeah.
That could give you another in.
Sure.
Because who knows what her questions were, but that would be another way to talk to her too. I mean, just remember, we have the gospel. The gospel is a beautiful thing. There's always a way in. There's always something that people are needing as a human being separated from God that will speak to. Hopefully, I mean, obviously, God has to open people's eyes and help them to mm-hmm. see that as something they desire. But there will be a way in if you start talking.
One of the last characteristics of a good ambassador, it's in the back of the tactics book, and you can also find the Ambassador's Creed on our website, is that we're dependent. And that it means this character quality is that we understand that the results that we get are a combination of our best efforts mixed with God's action. I don't remember exactly how I put it, but the point is that it's not all up to God. God acts mediately. He acts through people almost in every case. Okay, there are some exceptions, but the rule is that he acts mediately through people. That's us. Okay, and what are we to do? We are to communicate clearly, effectively, as clearly as possible, as persuasively as possible, as accurately as possible. All right? And then we let God do what he wants to do. Then it's the rest is on his shoulders, but that's a responsibility that we have. And that's why Standard Reason is here, to help people to do that.
Yeah. Here's a question from Fire Sheba. We can be socially conditioned to deeply believe in a certain religion because of the society we are born in. How will those who were conditioned from birth to believe in something other than Christianity be judged?
Well, social conditioning is not the same as brainwashing. I know this term comes up a lot, and if my wife just asked me the other day about the movie The Manchurian Candidate. I said, yeah, that came out in like 1960s. Oh, there's a new version that's come out, she said. All right. I said, the premise upon which that movie is built, though, at least the original, is brainwashing. And that is, somebody's so mentally controlled that their behaviors can be manipulated very precisely with certain cue words, okay? And that was the characteristic of Manchurian Candidate. I think it was during the Korean, right after the Korean War, where this came out. It was based on that. In any event, that doesn't happen. Human minds don't work that way. That brainwashing is not possible. No, indoctrination is. That means you can persuade people through social pressure, as per the question here, socially conditioned to believe certain things, but it's not an absolute. You are not locked in. You are free agents. You are able to be persuaded by thought out of these things. And this happens all the time. People are indoctrinated in a religious view, and they grow up and they say, that's not for me. And for a lot of folks, that's Christianity. I'm not using the word indoctrination in the negative sense there. It's just the way they're trained, but they break out. And so this is true in every culture, that the possibility exists. And what Paul says in Romans chapter 1 is that every single individual has two things. They have the external witness of the true God, and they have the internal witness to the true God. All right. But what they choose to do is to suppress that truth in unrighteousness. So there isn't, we kind of conjure up this idea that this noble person out there that just happens to be tricked in a circumstance geographically or socially that doesn't give them an opportunity to consider the specific claims of the gospel. So what? God's going to condemn them because of a social or geographical idiosyncrasy? No, God's going to judge them for their sin, which people all know about and are all responsible for. Now, I'm going to say something now that is not going to sit well with a lot of Christians, and I'm not trying to press any particular kind of doctrine of salvation here, although it is favorable to one. I'm just making a point. God doesn't owe anyone salvation. Salvation is an act of grace. Grace is unmerited favor. If it's merited, it's not grace. God loves, but he has no obligation of love to offer grace. It is to offer grace as an act of love is over and above moral obligation. Philosophers called her a supererogatory act. It's like an act of heroism. It's commendable, but it's not required. God's grace is not required. The angels fell. Nobody got grace. Why did he give grace to us? Because he wanted to. He has no obligation. He has an obligation of justice, not to punish the innocent and to punish the guilty, but he has no obligation to forgive the guilty. This is something that every Christian has got to absorb, or else they are not going to get salvation right. Now, when you realize that, then the question is not whether they were socially conditioned to believe one religion over another one, or that they didn't have a chance to hear the gospel. None of that is relevant to this point. What is only relevant to this point is whether or not they are lawbreakers before God. And that is the basis on which they are judged in Revelation 20. I mean, this is not some wild-eyed speculation that I'm making. This is solid theology. However, a lot of Christians don't get it because they think God's not just, but he is fair. He gives everybody an equal shot. No. There is no moral obligation for that. There is no divine obligation for that. And there is no, well, let me, it isn't as if this is a big emphasis in Scripture. However, there is a sense that in the Romans 1 passage, we do have a statement by God that even though he doesn't owe everybody salvation, he hasn't hidden himself. And by the way, in the book of Acts, there's a statement to the same effect. God's evidence is obvious to anyone who is interested. And when we respond to the revelation that we've been given, God gives more. Okay? And you can cast that out as a Calvinist or Arminian or however you want to do it. But even if God gives no more revelation, the amount of revelation is adequate to create culpability, which is blame, so that, and this is a phrase that's repeated twice there in Romans 1, they are without excuse. It's very straightforward. Now, this grates against us. We don't like it, but it ought not be confusing as theological truth. It's right there. Okay? So, yeah, I don't like that people are grown in societies where they are directed in one way, and they believe that, and then they die, and then they get judged, especially when the society is really crappy. They're raised in oppression and poverty, then they die and go to hell. That's pretty gloomy. That's the consequence of sin. That's the result of the devil. But it is also human beings who are fallen who are cooperating with that. They do not love the truth, so they're easily dissuaded, maligned, misled. 1 Thessalonians or 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. It's right there. All right.
And that's how we all start out.
Yeah, that's right.
We are children of God's wrath.
Yes, Ephesians 2.
We were in rebellion.
It's all there, you know, but man, does this make us uncomfortable? It makes me uncomfortable saying it. But I am not uncomfortable regarding the accuracy of it. I'm discomfited by the reality of it. So I am sympathetic to those who, that's a bummer. I'm sympathetic. But the fact is, God tells us the truth regarding these things. And it's not gray. It ain't just, well, could be this, could be that. And by the way, I'm thinking about the spate of deconversions in the last couple of years. And so many of them seem to be based on the fact that truths taught in the Scripture are not palatable to the people who had believed them or were raised with them. Man, I don't like this kind of thing that homosexuality is wrong, or I can't sleep with my girlfriend, or I can't do whatever I want. I don't like this, and I don't like that. And hell, what a bummer. Well, it is a bummer, but it doesn't mean it's not real. And because they have a whole bunch of things they don't like, they ditch Christianity. Okay, I get it. A lot of things I don't like either, but it doesn't make them not true. And what's the alternative? And this is a question that people have to ask, and they don't. What's the alternative? Oh, I can be footloose and fancy free. I can do whatever I want and then complain about the immoral lives of other people and Christians who are judgmental. Well, wait a minute. You can't complain about that. Not immorally. You don't believe in God anymore. You're out. You might think, well, there's some spiritual dimension, but where is your morality coming from? I don't care where you think it's coming from. If it's coming from some kind of divine creature, whatever morality you think that you acknowledge, however watered down it's going to be, so that all the things that bothered you about Christianity now you think are wonderful, but you still, you know, don't think you should force your views on other people and all that other kind of stuff, or you shouldn't be hurting other people, I guarantee you, you violate those commands all the time. Which is Paul's point in Romans 2. In that you judge another, you are guilty of the very things that you say you shouldn't do. There is my point here, there is no way out. You get rid of God, you get rid of morality. You get rid of the God of the Bible, which is the God who forgives, and you still got some morality that you disobey. And now you're guilty without a forgiving God. Unless you just want to make up your own fantasy, and then you might as well go to Hogwarts or something like that and live in a fantasy world, or Middle Earth, or wherever you want to go. Live in your fantasy. And fantasies aren't reality. Reality is going to bite you. Reality is what hurts you when you bump into it, because it doesn't go away just because you believe something more fun. Sorry if that was a little intense, but it really bothers me about these deconversions. It's troublesome. I understand that. And sometimes it's because of Christians, not because of Christianity. But in any event, it discredits all this, and you figure, okay, well, where are you going? What are you opting for? And it turns out to be incoherent or nonsense or no hope in it. But it makes you feel good because you get to do what you want in the moment.
Well, thank goodness the gospel is true. And we do have a way for forgiveness. All right. Thank you, Greg. And thank you, everyone, for your questions. We really appreciate hearing from you. Thanks for listening. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.